May it please the court, the appellant, Raybould Group, is, among other ventures, a developer of new home neighborhoods, doing most of its business north of the C&D Canal. It appeals...
The three of us won't hold that against them.
In candor, I thought I should make the disclosure, Your Honor.
Actually, you could make the argument, continue doing it north of the Canal.
Raybould appeals from an opinion and order of the Superior Court, which in turn affirmed an order or series of orders of the Public Service Commission, which promulgated a new regulation to govern contributions in aid of construction that a water utility, now must seek from developers or homeowners or whoever is the sponsor or builder of a new project that needs connection to the water system. Regulation 3.82 does two things. The first, Raybould agrees with. The first requires that the water utility collect from the sponsor of the new project all costs that are directly assignable to that project. Raybould's practice, sort of correlative with the practice of United Water and Artesian in northern Newcastle County, has been to pay such costs before this proceeding was initiated. So Raybould has no objection to the fact that it's now mandatory. Raybould does object, however, to the second category of costs, so-called Category 2 costs, that refer to transmission, supply treatment, and or other utility plant costs that are not assignable to a specific project. And there's some more language in the reg, but Ms. McDowell, the staff witness, and Mr. Cotton, the public advocate's witness, both made clear their understanding that these costs are for general system costs, not directly allocable to the new customers, and they can in fact be used to serve other customers, incumbent ratepayers, if you will.
Mr. Inskip, before you start your legal argument, tell us Raybould's position, or clarify it for me, with regard to the estimate of these indirect costs. You know, there's reference in the record that over a period of time these were looked at. The staff came up with an average of $1,600 to $6,000, and then the issue in our case is $1,500. But is that relevant at all to this appeal, or is your argument strictly a legal argument that even if $1,500 is reasonable for the indirect cost, it's not permitted?
The latter, Your Honor. However, this may sound like a factual argument, and I will put it out there for the court's judgment to decide. Raybould understands that the commission, and for example, Ms. McDowell, who did a study, is entitled to deference on factual issues. And Raybould does not attack what she found. But Raybould does contest that she went as far as the commission needed to go to reach a conclusion.
Primarily, we don't need to focus on that. Your position is, whatever the number, it's not permitted as a matter of law.
That's correct. I will say, however, that the 1500 or whatever number she came up with, I have no reason to question that the cost she found in each of the utilities reports. However, she did not arrive at a net cost of adding the new homeowners or ratepayers to the system, because she did not net out against that number the sums that they will now contribute as ratepayers for the already built part of the system that heretofore they had not been paying for. But with that qualification, we don't make a factual argument. Raybould submits that the new sum for general system-wide, the new fee for system-wide transmission, supply, and treatment costs runs afoul of three statutes, and I'll just name them quickly. One, 26 Delaware Code Section 302 provides that the commission will include, and I think that's a quote, those precise costs and rate base. There's sort of a parallel negative provision in another statute, Section 303A, which prohibits the commission or prohibits any utility from discriminating indirectly or directly in favor or against any entity. And Raybould submits that those two provisions are almost mirror images in prohibiting what's being done with Category 2 costs. Finally, Section 1401 of Title 26 requires the commission to encourage or require water utilities in northern Newcastle County to establish rates to encourage conservation and by an informed rate-paying public. Raybould submits that trying to keep rates down by the mechanism of requiring this $1,500 per home contribution from one set of people is inconsistent with that policy because it makes consumption cheaper.
That's what the Superior Court opinion described as a far-fetched argument?
Yes.
And what was the basis for that?
For the Superior Court's characterization of it, I don't know, Your Honor. I obviously didn't communicate the point very well, but it's there in our briefs, and if I get to it this morning, I'll go to it. Or if Your Honor wants to hear more about it now, I'll get into it. The Court's review of these strictly legal issues is plenary and de novo. I think the most recent pronouncement of this Court on that I know of in this context is the Public Water Supply Company, the DePasquale case. The Court below said or noted in its discussion of that decision that the Court can sometimes give weight to longstanding agency interpretations of a statute they're charged with enforcing. That is not the case with the Category 2 costs here, Your Honors. It's a regulatory innovation. As the public advocate acknowledged in its brief, it's a new fee imposed by a new regulation. So I submit that there's no deference owed, and the Court will engage in its usual de novo review.
Is this unique to Delaware, or does it happen around the country?
Your Honor, I think it might be, although I have not done that research. I did read a lot of contribution and aid of construction cases trying to decide what the General Assembly meant in 1974 when it briefly mentioned the concept, you know, and the only place it's mentioned in Title 26 is in the 102.7 rate base calculation formula. As far as I could tell, what people understood by the concept then was what the Commission first understood the concept in its 1980 regulation, extensions, physical extensions necessary to connect the new neighborhood or the new industrial project, whatever it may be, with the water system. And there are cases like that Connecticut case that involved electric utilities rather than water utilities, just recognizing that to take service, you need the utility to extend facilities out to you, you can reasonably be expected to pay some of that cost. But I put it this way, I found no case, and I was trying to limit it to what the General Assembly may have understood in 1974. I found no case up until then that was indicated anything like this general system cost as contributions in aid of construction. Now, turning to Section 302, that statute states, quote, the commission will include in the utility's rate base, treat as used and useful utility plant, and accordingly allow to be fully recovered in the utility's rates without imputation of revenues all costs which are incurred by the water utility in the exercise of its good faith business judgment in constructing facilities, including, and excuse my eyesight here, without limitation, supply, treatment, and transmission facilities, precisely the same subject matter as covered by the regulation under Category 2 costs, to serve the needs of existing customers or of persons who are reasonably anticipated by the water utility to be its customers within 3 years. And it continues. Now, the commission decided, and the court below agreed, that the purpose of this statute is to protect the utility, i.e. its investors, from second-guessing by the commission, disallowing the costs incurred by the utility in certain circumstances. It certainly does that, but it doesn't just it's not merely a statutory determination that investors will not have to pay. It's a determination that customers, ratepayers, will pay for the system used to serve them. Hardly a novel point. It's the norm for utility rate making, but it's expressly stated here, and the new regulation is inconsistent with it. I think the commission here finds itself in the same posture it did when it was before the court in the Wilmington Suburban Water case reported in 467 Atlantic 2nd. There, the commission assigned a zero cost of capital to contributed property in order to essentially work around the statute 1027 that requires that depreciation on such property be included in rate base. This court held that the commission cannot do that, that if there was an inequity there, that was a matter for the General Assembly to revisit. But the General Assembly having spoken, the commission was not free to work around it. Here, the commission is trying to work around Section 302 by imposing on developers and new homeowners the $1,500 fee so that rate base can be reduced accordingly. But the General Assembly has spoken, and the commission's position is erroneous.
Now, how does the you basically had no objection to collecting from the sponsor all costs directly assignable to the project, and that's the transmission, includes the transmission. Isn't that within this literal language that you just read to us?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think, as I understand the Category 1A and 1B language, it can be off-site, and if Your Honor is saying that, that's true. It goes to the marginal cost of hooking up the new development. And it may be that there's a main that has to come a ways off the property limits, and the regulation does require that the sponsor of the project pay for that. But what we're talking about now in Category 2 is assume that's been done. They still want to collect a $1,500 fee for the residue that can't be assigned to the specific project. It's an intellectual exercise that, there are more people here, So someday that's going to be more wells and more treatment, but it's not directly. We don't contest the directly assignable, but this $1,500 fee is not that. It's what's left over. It's what you can't specifically say this development is causing, but you can say that growth is expensive, and they're trying to get an incremental contribution.
Okay. Even though you don't contest it, do you agree that the directly assignable cost, collection of that fee or cost, is lawful?
Yes.
And does that have to be included in the rate base?
No, no. That 102, I think the Category 1 costs, although spelled out, is what the General Assembly was thinking about when it enacted 102.7 and said that those will be excluded from rate base.
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
I'd better, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Francis Murphy for the Delaware Public Service Commission. Mr. Lewis and I will be splitting time, and I wanted to say at the outset that we would respectfully suggest that if there are technical questions about water utility practice, for example, those might better be addressed to me. We are here today to address a challenge to a Public Service Commission regulation that has been in effect for almost 2 years now and will soon come up for review by the Commission again. All of the developers in Delaware have been paying contributions under the regulation for almost 2 years. The only objecting party in Delaware is the Raybould Group. The regulation at issue here is the most significant step taken in decades to protect the rights of Delaware utility ratepayers. The regulation will save Delaware ratepayers millions of dollars. We read a great deal in the media about the high utility costs, particularly electric rates. What we don't read about are the unsung heroes whose efforts in this docket have allowed Delawareans to save thousands of dollars on their water bills over a lifetime.
And Mr. Murphy, while you're talking about that, as you know, Mr. Inskip's argument is you're saving money for the existing ratepayers at the expense of the new ratepayers, and that is in some way discriminatory.
Yes, Your Honor, and quickly, what Raybould is suggesting is that you save $1,500 now, which allegedly the homeowner pays, but that's not really ever established in the record, that you're going to save them $1,500. And what's going to happen, though, is that those same ratepayers over the course of perhaps 5 years are going to wind up paying that $1,500 back plus interest, and I'm going to make that point. So it's not saving those ratepayers a penny. It's really going to cost them money once they get onto a water system or paying rates to a public water utility.
So your point is that this $1,500 is saving all ratepayers money, the existing ratepayers plus the people who are going to be buying these houses from Raybould.
Exactly, Your Honor. Your Honor, just to go to the merits then.
But is it a correct statement that the record doesn't show who pays the $1,500 ultimately? In other words, it doesn't make it clear that it is not passed on in every instance to the home buyer, the future rate player, the new home buyer?
In my view, Your Honor, it does not. Witnesses testified about it.
Either way, it doesn't establish that.
Yes, Your Honor, witnesses testified about it, and I tried to make the point in my brief. In a time of rapidly appreciating home prices, a home builder may be able to pass on the
$1,500. If it doesn't demonstrate either way whether the $1,500 is passed on to the new home buyer, how can the commission take the position that it saves the current rate players and the new rate payers equally so?
Well, even if the $1,500 is allocated completely to the home buyer, when that new home buyer starts paying water rates, within a period of 3 to 5 years, they will have paid back the $1,500, Your Honor, with interest. In other words, the water rates are going to be so much higher if the definition of contribution put forward by Raybould is adopted by this court they're going to be paying such higher water rates that the water companies are going to be charging them far more than $1,500 over the course of as little as 5 years. So they may say $1,500 at the outset, but within 5 years they'll have paid that $1,500 back.
But at the same time, they're paying it, if they're paying it through the rate base and not as a direct or an indirect fee through the developer, everyone's helping them pay it off.
Well, my point is, Your Honor, we're not. If we're here to talk about saving home buyers money, which is what I thought Raybould's position is, their approach is not going to save the money. It's actually going to cost them a lot more than $1,500. When you take a couple million dollars out of rate base, you're saving the customers of that water utility on their rates permanently for their entire lifetime, the money that does not go into those rates.
Well, I thought we were talking about saving all of the ratepayers' money, not two distinct classes, the current rate payers and the new home buyer rate payers. What I'm trying to figure out from your argument is, having said that the record doesn't demonstrate who pays the $1,500, how do we know then that any result here has some beneficial effect on current and new rate payers as a whole?
Well, Your Honor, the money comes in as contributions. It has to be deducted from the rate base. And given the amount of contributions that are taken in, the rates go down automatically, and they go down permanently. If it's a contribution, it's never put in rate base. So any customer that comes on, that is either on the system or comes onto the system, gets the benefit of the contribution for the entire time that they're a water utility customer.
I may be missing the point. I'll concede that. But I understand how that would benefit current rate payers because the contribution doesn't affect their rate base. But what I'm having some difficulty understanding is, are they being treated the same as the new home buyer, new rate payers, who the record doesn't reflect either are or are not defraying the $1,500 contribution out of their home price?
Your Honor, once you come on the system, you pay the same rates as the existing customer. If those rates are higher for all customers because the contributions are not being collected, then the new homeowner is paying.
Well, you may find it amusing that I don't get the point. I don't find it amusing. I'm trying to get the point. What I'm trying to understand is you told us that the record doesn't reflect who pays the $1,500 contribution, whether or not it's passed on to the new home buyer. I understand that if it doesn't go into the rate base at all, the theory is no one's rate base is adversely affected, the current or the new ones. But what I'm trying to get a handle on, the way in which this is interpreted, is it so clear that this is absorbed by the developer who makes the contribution with no adverse effect on the new home buyers or the current ratepayers?
Your Honor, I was only trying to have an appropriate give and take with the court. I wasn't.
All right, well, just get to the substantive point then. The smirk on your face was misinterpreted by me. Go ahead.
Your Honor, a real-world example. Artesian Water Company has 75,000 customers in the state of Delaware. If under this regulation they take in $7.5 million in rate base, when a new customer comes on board, every year that they are on board for Artesian, they will save $100 on their water bill because the $7.5 million is deducted from rate base. So they'll be saving $100 on their water bill. If you adopt the contribution definition that Raybould is arguing, contributions that have already been deducted from rate base to the tune of tens of millions of dollars will have to be added back in rate base. If that were to happen, the customer bills will go up by hundreds of dollars. So within a matter, if they go up $300-$400, within a matter of 4 or 5 years, the new home buyer who we supposedly saved $1,500 for will have paid more than $1,500 in increased water rates. How it works.
Is it accurate that if, even though Raybould does not object to collecting from the sponsor all costs directly assignable to the project, that those would go back in under their legal argument even though they don't?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. That's what they're telling you that, well, I don't think that's – what they're saying is this. If you have a contribution but it is not directly assignable to a project, that has to be in rate base, not the ones that are directly assignable. Those are contributions. They come out of rate base. But if it's not directly assignable to a specific – a specific project that falls outside the definition of contribution, it must be put in rate base. Artesian Water Company has $58.5 million worth of contributions on its books right now. If the court says that those contributions get to be put in rate base because they're not directly assignable to a specific project, the water utility rates for Artesian customers could double overnight. I mean, that's the impact of what they're arguing that you do. It's not just what is being collected under the current regulatory regime. Artesian's been deducting contributions from rate base for years. They have an accumulated contribution on their books. It's $58.5 million. If $20 million of that is not directly assignable to a specific project, if this court adopts Ray Bull's argument, it goes right into rates.
Is this a mixed question of law and fact? I mean, there testimony was presented, these numbers of 1,600 and higher. The premise of all of that, isn't it that all of these harder to allocate costs are actually still direct costs related to the project? Is that right? Am I misunderstanding that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, well, help me.
This is the purpose of the regulation, and believe me, Your Honor, I believe the court has full command of the issues in this case. I'm sure that the court has read all of the papers, and the questions are quite helpful to me in helping you set forth our position. The regulation is set up.
Tell me what the $1,500 actually represents.
They are Category 2 costs, and as Your Honor correctly pointed out, they are not just to cover indirect costs, they are to cover direct costs that a utility incurs. And the way it works is this. There is every conceivable scenario when you're building a water system for a development. Let's assume Raybould builds a development of 100 homes. And let's assume that they have to pay everything up in Category 1 costs up to the main. Category 1 costs only cover up to the main. The main could be right on the street right outside of the development. In order to serve that development, they might need sufficient water pressure and new water sources to pump water to that development. So United Water has to go out and put a pumping station in a creek and has to treat that water in order to provide service to the new customers. That new plant will be located beyond the main. Category 1 only covers the costs that go up to the main. Category 2 relates to that plant. Now, that plant was built directly to serve Raybould's customers. The cost of that plant is not covered by Category 1 because it's beyond the main. You have a very expensive water plant that is being built to serve Raybould's customers. It's not recovered. That plant is directly assignable to Raybould. Now, in the real world, when United Water or Artesian goes to build a plant, they typically size it bigger than just for one development. So there might be projected developments in the same area. So they might build a plant, say, double the size that they ordinarily would build to serve Raybould in anticipation of new customers. What the water utilities told us in the back and forth in preparing this regulation was that we don't want to get into a battle with the developers every time we have to decide, figure out what part of that plant is assignable to the developer. It'll cost, tens of thousands of dollars in lawyer's fees every time we build a plant. So we came up with a regulatory scheme that set a fixed fee that is very low compared to, for example, Artesian's average cost of $6,000, a very conservative estimate. There's one other point I need to make.
You're out of time. Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Yes, sir. I apologize, Ron. I did not mean anything.
I said I might have misinterpreted. Don't worry about it.
May it please the court. For the record, my name is Lawrence Lewis, state solicitor. And it's my privilege to represent the public advocate, Mr. Arthur Padmore, who is in the courtroom today. The role of the public advocate is to represent the interest of consumers in regulatory proceedings. The advocate is to make, under the statute, is to advocate for the lowest reasonable rates for consumers. In this role, in the late 1990s.
That includes the home buyers who will ultimately move into these houses, right?
Yes, it does. Okay. Ultimately,
do you agree that the record is silent on who actually ultimately pays the $1,500 contribution? That at least at one point I understood to be the contention here, that there's discrimination inconsistent with the statutory authority to adopt a regulation between new home buyers and existing ratepayers. Are the new home buyers and the existing ratepayers, for the purpose of your client's position, all consumers? And is the record clear that there isn't more being paid by the new home buyer slash consumer than the current ratepayer slash consumer?
I would say that they are all consumers, yet all of those consumers, whether existing homeowners or new home purchasers, will pay the rate that is established after these calculations are made. So in effect, there is not really any discrimination. And I would also point the court to the well-reasoned opinion of the of Judge Silverman and Superior Court that this is really a charge on the developers for their water expansion costs based on the calculations of commission staff, specifically in the record A13 through 15 by Mrs. Connie McDowell.
Does the record establish that the $1,500, I assume, per unit contribution is being paid out of the revenues of the developer and affecting the developer's net profits and having no impact on the new home buyer at all?
No, it is a charge that the commission is requiring through regulation that the water utilities collect from those developers.
Well, that I understand, but does the record reflect who actually is paying that $1,500 contribution? Does the record show that it affects, after gross revenues are considered, an expense to the developer that bottom line adversely affects the net profit of the developer and has a zero impact on the new home buyer because it isn't in any way passed on to or defrayed by the purchase price of the home? Does the record reflect that one way or another?
No, Your Honor. Clearly, it just the regulation requires the utility to collect the charge. After that point, there is no requirement that I'm aware of that would, as you say, require
the... Is there a hypothetical? Is there an economist who's projected that should the $1,500 be passed on to the new home buyer, that the new home buyer would not be adversely affected as a ratepayer any more than the existing ratepayers for whom the current charge is not being paid by a developer? Is there any kind of economic projection of that kind?
Yes, I would. The analysis that is in the record is at pages A28 and 29 is the testimony of James Cotton, who was the expert for the public advocate in the administrative proceedings below. And his testimony was that based on prior practice, there was an inadequate amounts of contribution and or advances, which caused the rate base to increase, and therefore the number of rate filings to increase as well. And once the rate base is overstated, then rates would be overstated as well.
Well, but the issue here isn't whether or not a $1,500 contribution collected by the utilities will reduce the overall cost in the short and the long term. I thought the issue here was whether, as a practical matter, enforcing this regulation put a burden on new home buyers, potential ratepayers, that wasn't placed on existing ratepayers, and in that respect was discriminatory and contrary to the legislative intent. Does the record speak to that? I think it's clear that over time, any contribution paid by anyone will reduce the cost, the rate base, to everyone. But is there any kind of suggestion in the record that the numbers were run to establish that, oh, no, clearly this is being defrayed entirely by the developer and it has no adverse impact on the new home buyer?
The record, the reference in the record is to the testimony of Ms. McDowell from the commission staff, which takes the total number of costs for the three Class A water utilities and divides by the number of new customers in the years 2000 to 2004. So that's the predicate record that was before the commission to establish this rule. So in effect, the as Judge Silverman stated, the $1,500 fee may very well be passed on to the new home buyers, yet there is a reasonable basis for that fee, and therefore, under the substantial evidence test, the DePasquale standard, then it's a reasonable regulation. And just to, I see that my time is almost up, but in closing, I'd just like to suggest that there is an adequate authority in Section 302, and read in harmony with 102, as explained by Judge Silverman, to enact this regulation. And
is this being done around the country? Does the record reflect anything on that, one way or the other?
No, Your Honor. The record does not reflect anything on that point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to address, if I may, the questions Your Honors had of my colleagues.
Can you include in your response, if we rule in your favor, are all the rates of these other utilities going to double, as Mr. Murphy indicated?
I don't think there's anything in the record.
Go up, to be fair.
And I don't know. And I don't know, you know, what Artesian has on its books is not in this record. It's the first I've heard of it today. I feel like I would be talking out of my hat. But I will say, just for context, and this is a factual argument and not why I'm here this morning, but United Water has always insisted on Category 1 costs, you know, costs directly allocable to this new development. And as a result, they have had no rate increases. I think they've got a rate case now, but over a several-year period, during which Artesian and Tidewater were not collecting those costs and coming in for rate increases all the time. Those facts are in this record, and give some grounds to believe that it's not going to be catastrophic on rates if this Category 2 costs is done away with. The big nut is probably costs necessary to serve a new development, and those, I understand, will be collected, and it's a good thing. On the issue of who pays for the $1,500 contribution, in some cases, Your Honors, by the terms of Regulation 3.82 itself, it could be the homeowner. Any project sponsor and their these costs will be contributed by the contractor, builder, developer, municipality, homeowner, or other project sponsor. So it could be the homeowner directly. Ms. McDowell, on behalf of on behalf of the commission staff, stated as follows, and this is her testimony at page A15 of the appendix of Raybould. Staff believes that the proposed revision should be adopted because new customers should bear the cost of expansion, not current ratepayers. These new customers are the cost causers. Developers and or builders can also include these costs in the price of the land and or house. Staff also believes that if the cost is not paid for by the new customer or developer, et cetera, but that clearly the commission staff thought that the developers were going to pass the fee right through. I see I'm almost out of time.
Just as they would the direct costs for hooking up to the main.
Yes.
Why should anyone?
There's no distinction. And she was talking about both, I believe. And finally, one final authority on that point. The footnote at page 8 of our reply brief has the Supreme Courts of Virginia and Maryland just saying, obviously, contributions in aid of construction are going to get passed through to the buyer by the developer. So I think that's the record is not silent on that.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.